Hello, gentlemen. It's nice to be back again. We're about to continue with the bottom of Hamad Aleph in Ksubis, which will then take us on to Hamad Beis. Before we start that, I just wanted to give over a nice idea that I heard from my Rebbe of David Harris, actually today. He said this idea that Yaakov, the Ralbag says that Yaakov was deceived by Lavan, and the way the Ralbag learns the whole situation where Lavan deceived Yaakov in terms of giving him Leah before Rachel because Lo Yaseh came Komenu, Blessed Bechir, Lithnei Bechir, we don't give the younger one before the older one, so therefore Lavan felt sort of entitled to not tell Yaakov that he was actually giving him not the wife Yaakov had thought he was getting, but rather Leah. And the Ralbag learns that cheating happened before Yaakov had done even the first 7 years. That really Yaakov's original agreement had been to work 7 years after he received Rachel as a wife. And then he was given Leah, and so then a week later he married Rachel, and then he worked 14 years for both of them after that. And the Ralbag says that something we can learn from this is that despite the fact that Yaakov was cheated, he worked for Lavan as a complete and full employee, as erlich as possible, you know, with putting forth the requisite effort that Yaakov would always have put forth for somebody he was working for, no less as a result of Lavan's having cheated him. And the Ralbag says elsewhere that this was a job that was very lowly for Yaakov. Yaakov really didn't want to take the job of being a shepherd at all. But he took it because of the fact that he didn't want to have to rely on people to support him. And the Ralbag himself says, we see from there the benefits of going to work and not sort of mooching off others. And furthermore, the Ralbag says that Yaakov really offered 7 years, which was a very generous amount of time to work for, and granted it's for his wife, but nevertheless, it's still a very sort of over the top. You know, I'll give you whatever you want. I'll give you 7 years if you want. You know, 7 years is just an extreme amount of time. That's 7 years of Yaakov's life. And Yaakov was not a young man at this time. He arrived at Lavan's house at the age of 77. So, and nevertheless, because despite all this, Yaakov was able to sort of put all that aside, and without any harboring any resentment, without holding any grudges to Lavan for having cheated him, he was able to work as a complete, wholeheartedly, as a good employee for the entire 14 years and put aside that grudge. And where exactly does that come from? So, on the one hand, the very basic idea is the fact that Yaakov must have been on a very high level in terms of his understanding that, you know, no one can help me, no one can hurt me other than Hashem. That recognition, that understanding that for a real Baal Bitachon, Hashem is the only one who can cause any harm or good to come to you, and therefore, if something else happens to me which seems to come from Lavan, or which seems to come from anybody else, it's not really from them. It's really only them acting with Hashem's shlichus. And of course that's true, but the Ralbag also implies that Yaakov was able to put aside all that resentment and made the effort to achieve such a high level of bitachon, of recognition that only Hashem can cause him harm or good, as a result of his wanting to be an erlich employee, of his recognizing the honest thing to do here, the right thing to do is to uphold my side of the bargain equally well, despite the fact that Lavan has not upheld his. But how can I do that if I have some resentment, if I'm not going to be a good employee because I'm upset that Lavan cheated me? The answer is I have to make an effort to recognize that Lavan can only hurt me, and Lavan can only do things negative to me if it's really from Hashem, and it has nothing to do with Lavan. And my chiyuv, my obligation to Lavan, to fulfill the achrayas that I accepted upon myself of working 14 years as an honest shepherd, that achrayas still is upon me, and I have to work as hard as I can to achieve that, and because of that, I'm going to make an effort to put my resentments aside, whatever effort that may entail. So just a nice idea. First of all, the high level that Yaakov achieved in terms of not harboring any resentment is itself, an accomplishment that we can learn from. You know, there's a concept of masa yagia maasai, maase avosai. When will my deeds reach my forefathers' deeds? We should ask ourselves that, you know, when am I going to live up to their model? There are role models. When are my deeds going to measure up to theirs? Of course, you know, to really achieve that, and actually the same deeds as theirs is, of course, a very high level, but that should be our measuring rod. So that's sort of step one, that idea that Yaakov had this tremendously high level of bitachon that we can learn from. And step two is to recognize the tremendous, tremendous responsibility that one should view it when he sort of gives his word and he says, makes a deal, I'm going to uphold my end of the bargain, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z in return for yours, even if what the person promises him is not really fulfilled. Nevertheless, you accept it upon yourself to deliver, you accept it upon yourself to uphold your end of the bargain. That hasn't changed, you still have that responsibility. Just two different lessons we have to learn from our holy forefather, Yaakov Avinu. That being said, let's turn our attention to Dafei Amud Aleph in Ksuvos. We left off just before the beginning of an Agadat HaGemara, a Gemara that really deals with some very esoteric concepts, certainly not Ksuvos-oriented, but not even traditional, like, halacha-oriented type of Gemaras, rather somewhat out there. You'll see what I mean as we take a look. About four lines up from the beginning of the wide lines on Hey Amud Aleph, the last word on the line is Darash Bar Kafra. Bar Kafra made a drasha from Psukim. The reason we're bringing this in now is because of the fact that Bar Kafra himself was our proof earlier that a basula who gets married on Wednesday evening, does not necessarily have to get married on Wednesday, or be together with her husband on Wednesday night as a result of, you know, him calming down. There's some other idea of mazel, that there's a nice mazel of Dagim on Thursdays, and therefore it's better to wait till Wednesday night, which is really Thursday, but nothing to do with our concern that he's going to calm down. And Bar Kafra was our indication of that, and therefore, on account of bringing in Bar Kafra's statement over there, we're bringing in another statement of Bar Kafra, and I'm actually going to bring in another statement of Bar Kafra shortly. So Bar Kafra made a drasha. The deeds of righteous people are greater than the deeds that were done in the creation of heaven and earth. How do we know this? That whereas by the creation of heaven and earth it writes, my hand founded the land and my right hand poured the heavens. And the key element here is that the word hand is, and the word right hand as well, are written in singular. Whereas by the deeds of the righteous, it writes, that a foundation for Hashem's dwelling that you, Hashem, make, and Mikdash Hashem, sort of a holy dwelling place for you, Hashem, Konanu Yadecha, your hands established. And we see here that Konanu Yadecha, the word Yadecha is written in plural. And this pasuk is a reference to the fact that the deeds of tzaddikim achieve, sort of, for Hashem, a dwelling. And we see that the deeds of tzaddikim are written in plural, with the plural term of hands. In fact, that one was in the singular hand, and one was the plural hands, is an indication that the one that's in plural is sort of a greater, somehow maybe more comprehensive action. Maybe comprehensive is not the best word, but a more, just a greater action. Again, exactly what this means is not so clear. Somewhat esoteric and a little bit beyond the scope of our shiur, but we're going to try and learn it anyway. The Gemara then says, Heshiv Bavli Echad, one Babylonian, answered, Rav Chiya Shemo, and Rav Chiya is his name, he responded with another pasuk, which he felt was a question or a contradiction to this idea that Bar Kafra had put forth, V'yabeshes yadav yatzaru. In dry land his hands formed. So we see that the word hand is not written in singular, but rather in plural. Hands, yadav, means his hands. And we see that in terms of the creation of dry land, the formation of dry land, it writes with a plural. So we don't see that Ma'aseh Tzaddikim are actually greater, because here the creation of heaven and earth, or in this instance Yabeshes, which is dry land, was written with the plural of hands. So my answer is Yadav Ksiv. It's written, that word, although it says, it looks like it says Yado, it's pronounced Yadav, it's written without a Vav, without a Yud, because of the fact that it's an indication that even though it's pronounced plural, it really means a singular. And it shows us that really, there also, it was really only a singular hand of Hashem, as if that were possible, but a singular hand of Hashem that did the work. V'haksiv yatsaru. But the Gemara asks, didn't the pasuk say the word yatsaru, which is itself plural? So, granted, it may be written without a yud, but clearly the whole tense of the pasuk, or the whole, the way the pasuk is written, is in a plural sense. So the Gemara answers, Amar of Nachman bar Yitzchak, Yatsaru etzba'osav. The plural of the word Yatsaru refers to the fingers. His hand, singular, created with the fingers. And that's why it's written in plural, created, because of the fact that it was his fingers, Hashem's fingers that did the creating. Kibichsiv, as the Pasuk writes, Ki ara shomecha ma'aseh etzba'osecha, yareach kochavim asher kananta. David HaMelech is in Tehillim. I saw your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you established. And we see that referring in plural with the idea that Hashem's fingers were the ones that did the creation, that's something that we can do. That's a way that the pasuk would refer to the creation. Okay, let's take a look at the Gemara now. Has a question on that whole idea. Meisavei. The heavens tell the glory of God, and the work of His hands, the sky tells. So again, we see an idea, right? The heavens are sort of testifying by their very existence to God's greatness, and we see that it's a testament to Ma'ase Yadav, to the work of His hands in plural. So again, we see an idea that the plural hands are used in relation to the creation of heaven and earth. So my answer is Halchika Amai. This is what it means to say, Ma'ase Yedehem Shel Tzadikim Mi Magid. The work of the plural hands of Tzadikim, of righteous people, which is really what Bar Kappa was saying, what we're talking about. Who's going to tell that over? David HaMelech is sort of asking an applied question, a rhetorical question perhaps, with an answer that he himself is going to provide. What is going to relay the greatness of the deeds of the righteous people? And he gives the answer, Harakia, the sky does. Umayinihu, and then for us to sort of understand, and what exactly is that? How does the sky tell us the greatness of Tzadikim? Mater, that's rain. As we know, that Tzadikim, Rashi sort of spells out, the Tzadikim are the ones, whenever there was a shortage of rain, whenever there was a drought, they would pray, and the rain would come. And if you look in Maseches Tainis and other places as well, there are many, many stories of times of drought where tzaddikim opened up their hearts to Hashem and asked for mercy. And their tefillos were answered, and Hashem gave rain. And you see, through the sky delivering that rain, a testament to the greatness of our holy leaders who davened on our behalf and got us that rain. Okay, that's sort of the end of that piece. Very out there, very hard to understand exactly what it means. One hand, plural hands, Hashem's hands created the heaven and earth, that's not really true either. I was just discussing with somebody that although one is may not be considered an apikoros if he thinks that Hashem has a body, there's no question that Hashem does not. It's a machlokas, the Rambam and the Ravid, whether or not a person is considered an apikoros if he thinks Hashem has a body. The Rambam maintains that such a belief is in fact apikarsis, and would be considered almost like a denial of Hashem's existence on some level. One of the foundational principles of our religion. And the Ravid maintains that no, there were many great people who thought that Hashem had a body, and although it's not true, to believe such a thing does not render one an apikaros. So obviously, in any event, we see that Hashem didn't really have a body. So what exactly are we supposed to take from this, that Hashem had? Hashem's hands created Shemayim Va'aretz. Hashem doesn't really have hands. Hashem sort of, you know, Hashem spoke and things came into being. And presumably Hashem didn't even need to actually speak. Hashem could simply will it into being and it would exist. So how are we to interpret this? It's hard to know. But one thing I think we see for sure is the great reverence that we should hold the actions of the righteous. The tremendous way we should view them as being such great actions, such tremendous deeds that the righteous people accomplish. Clearly, if the Gemara is putting them on par with the creation of heaven and earth, there's something to be said for that. Okay, let's move on though to something that this next piece is a little bit easier to understand, although it's also somewhat out there. Darash Bar Kafra. Bar Kafra said a drasha. My dechsev, what does it mean that it writes in the pasuk of the Yasei that Tihiya Lecha Alaz Azenacha? You should have a spade together with your weapons, which the simple meaning of the pasuk is that when Bnei Yisrael go out to war, they should bring a shovel with them, together with the various other weapons that they're going to bring. Not to use as a weapon, but rather to dig a hole in which to do their necessary, and to then use the shovel to cover it with dirt afterwards. It's a specific law which is founded on the idea of tznius that Hashem gave us for when we go out to war. However, Bar Kafra darshins it to have another meaning. Al tikri azeinecha, do not read the word as azeinecha, your weapons, ela al ozenecha, on your ears. There should be a spade for you on your ears. What does that mean? She'im yishma adam davar she'ino hogan. If a person would hear something which is inappropriate, something which is not fit to, which he should not be listening to, yaniach etzba'o ba'aznam, he should place his finger in his ears. What does that have to do with a spade? He's going to say, v'hayin damar, and that's really what it meant. V'hayin damar Rabbi Elazar, this is what Rabbi Elazar meant when he said, mibneva etzba'osav sha'adam domos, we say this, for what reason are the fingers of man comparable to shovels? Right, because the fact that we're going to be able to use them, their shovel shape, or if I can make up a word, shovular, the shovular shape, and can take their finger and stick it in their ear in order to block it up, and therefore not hear whatever it was that he was inappropriate that he was near. I saw the Ein Yaakov says an interesting idea that the ear is the only of the instruments of our five senses which we don't have an ability to put a hold on. If something's near us and makes a sound, we're going to hear it. However, our eyes have eyelids, our mouth has lips. Our ears, however, have no block. I'm not sure exactly how he addresses the fact that our nose does not have a way of blocking out smells, but I suppose we have nostrils for that purpose as well, although we would need to use our fingers to hold them closed. They are still there. But our ears are just open to the world. So the answer is we have these fingers. And let's go back to Rabbi Elazar's statement just to finish it off. He says, what's the reason that a person's fingers are shaped like shovels? My time. Ilema, if you'll tell me, Mishum de Mechlekan, if you'll tell me it's because they're split rather than sort of being webbed like a duck. Kol chada v'chada l'nosei avida. That's because each and every finger has its own job. Damamar, as Mar said, Master said, Zu Zeres, Zu Kamitsa, Zu Amma, Zu Ezba, Zu Godel. Let's take a look at Rashi, who will help us identify exactly what each finger's job is. Chad Chad Lemelse, Rashi says, it's the second and then third line of Rashi, Kushihi. It's a question. Kol achas yesh bat tzorech, v'ach bat tzorech gavoa. Each one has a special purpose, even not just in terms of practically functioning, but in terms of the needs of serving Hashem. Zuzeres, Rashi says, min haktana, from the smallest finger, modidin zeres salchoshin, we measure off that amount of the choshin. There's a specific measurement needed called a zeres for the choshin, for the breastplate. It was a way of measuring a part of the construction of the choshin, and that finger is what's used to make that measurement. Zukmitsa. Me'etzba she'etzel haktana, from the ring finger, which is nearest to the small finger, maschilin likmotz chofet shalosh etzbos al pas yado. You begin to do the kmitza. The kmitza was, it's a little bit hard to demonstrate without using my hand. I'll make a little bit of a demonstration, though if you can't see it, you're going to have a little trouble understanding. But essentially, if you make a fist, and then take your pinky and your thumb, and spread them out, leave the middle three fingers remaining in place, those three fingers were used as a scoop for the Kohen Gadol when he did a part of an avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. He used those three fingers as a scoop to scoop up the carbon that he was, the avoda that he was doing, from the Mizbech HaZav in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So he would use those middle three fingers, and then the way I always understood it is that he uses his thumb and his pinky as sort of a way of leveling it off. Zu Amma, Rashi then says, the middle finger is used for measuring an Amma. Me'agdola, from the biggest one, Modedin Amas Binyan Va'amas Kelim. We measure the Amma that's used for construction and the Amma that's used for the Kelim. We know in the construction of the Beis HaMikdash and the construction of all the Kelim, all the various vessels that were used in the Beis HaMikdash, we needed to measure Amma for various reasons, and from that middle finger all the way to one's elbow is approximately an Amma. Obviously, it's a little bit tricky to understand how they would use body parts for measurements, since different people's body parts are different sizes, but at the very least, this gave them a general idea. Zu Etzba, this is a finger, this is referring to pointing, and more specifically to sprinkling. He says, L'matan damim shel chatas. For the giving of dam of the chatas, he uses it sort of flicking with that forefinger. L'chsiv be b'esbo, it writes it with the etzba. You have to use that finger to flick the blood against the curtain, which is part of the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. Zegodo, now your thumb, l'bohen yad da'aron u'dimisora. It was for when Aaron was doing, Aaron HaKohen, the Kohen Gadol, was doing various parts of the service, he would use his thumb, he would have to wash off his thumb in particular, and additionally, it also was true, he had to wash off his big toe, it was another part of it, and by the Mitzvah as well, we know that the thumb was a necessary part of his purification process. So let's return to the Gemara. Now that we see that every finger has its own holy purpose, so the Gemara now wants to return to our original purpose, trying to understand why they're shaped like shovels. Elamata meshupos kiseidos. What's the reason they are slanted and angled like shovels? Meaning, granted they are separate and distinct from each other, but they sort of have an angled shape. Right, every finger to some degree is wider at the bottom than it is at the tip, and at the very tip it comes together in a rounded way. Why is it created like that? She'im yishva adam davar she'eino hagon, if a person hears something which is not appropriate, yaniach atzbaosav ba'aznav, he should place his fingers in his ears. And for this purpose, our fingers were created in that shape. Okay, let's take a look at the next part of the Gemara. Tana de Rabbi Shmuel. This is related to the same idea. Mipnei ma ozen kula kasha. Why is the entire ear hard? It has cartilage, which gives it a very significant shape and form. So it's got substance to it. It's not just soft and mushy. But then v'ha'al yaraka. But the lobe of the ear is soft. What's the purpose of that? She'im yishma adam davar she'eino hagon. If a person hears something that's not appropriate, Yaakov al yalasocha, he can fold his lobe into his ear and use that to block out whatever it is he's hearing. These methods aren't fully foolproof, because if you've ever stuck your fingers in your ears or put your lobes in your ears, you will know that without making some kind of a noise at the same time, the sound will still penetrate to some degree, but it's certainly possible to block out the majority of sound. Okay, a nice idea. If you hear somebody who's saying Lashon Hara, you can stick your fingers in your ears. Let's return now to the sugi we originally started with. This is a little bit of a tangential part of the Gemara. The Gemara is now going to Oh, excuse me. There's one more statement. I apologize. Tanu Rabbanan. Let's take a look at the Gemara. The Gemara says, our rabbi taught, Ayashmiya Adam La'aznav Dvarim B'Telim. Nejehein Nichvos Tchila La'ivarim. Person should not allow his ears to hear needless words, because the ears are decomposed first when a person dies. Rashi explains why that is. In the first line of Rashi, Nichvos Tchila Le'Ivarim, Rakos V'Dakos Lichvos Mikulam. They are soft and light, and they're more easily decomposed than the rest, and therefore a person doesn't want to have his ears culpable for hearing all sorts of inappropriateness during his lifetime. Okay, now the Gemara is going to return to what was more our sugya. We were discussing what night of the week a person gets married, and as a result of that we were discussing whether a man and woman are able to sleep together for the first time on a Friday night. The concern might be that there might be some Chol Shabbos involved, because the husband is going to cause the wife to bleed. So is that some kind of a malacha? So the Gemara says as follows, and this is more the meaty part of our sugya. Ibailuhu, the Gemara asks a question, Mahu livul b'tchila b'shabbos? What's the halacha? Is a person allowed to be together with his wife for the first time on Shabbos? Now the way this Gemara is going to work is that at each juncture, the Gemara is going to give two options and say, do we view it this way or do we view it that way? And there's two different sets, I guess is the best word for them, two different lashanos of how exactly we break down these choices, for lack of a better word, these junctures. And you can almost imagine it sort of as a flowchart. And every time we get to two different options, the Gemara picks one of them, and then within that one creates a new dichotomy that we hadn't had before. Of the two sets, in the first one, our goal is to continually find new reasons to potentially make it mutter. In other words, at each juncture, we'll have two choices, and according to one choice, the halacha would be mutter, and according to the other, the halacha would be aser. And at each juncture we'll say, even if we took the usher path, even within that other path, is there a new dichotomy that we can create so that there's still sort of a mutter aspect even within that usher path? And again, we're going to take the usher path of those two choices, and then within that, are we going to be able to find a new way to make it mutter? Let's take a look and try and clarify what I just said, because I know without having a flowchart in front of us, it's a little hard to envision. The Gemara says, what's the halacha about being together with one's wife for the first time on Friday night? Dam mifkid pakid. Do we view it that the blood, which is going to come out, is stored as in a reservoir? Ochubui mechver. Or is it no different than all the rest of the blood in the body, and it's going to be like a wound, and when a wound is created in a person gets cut, they bleed. So similarly, the kala will bleed when her husband is with her for the first time. Now again, this isn't to make any kind of claims. The Gemara is not trying to make any claims about what exactly the science is. The Gemara's question was not about what exactly is happening inside of the kala, inside of the woman. The Gemara rather, although they know exactly how the blood may be stored inside the woman, how do we view it? Because of the fact that it's blood which is sort of made to come out when the hymen is broken, so then do we view it as blood that is sort of stored waiting to come out? Or do we view that as a wound? But and again, this is in terms of the stances of Hilchos Shabbos, but this has nothing to do with the Gemara expressing any kind of a view about the nature of the scientific nature of how a woman's body is created, what the physiological nature is of a woman on the inside. It's rather, how do we view it? Of course, we know exactly what the nature is of how the blood is inside there. And then the Gemara says, so now that we gave two choices. As we said before, one choice is going to be us, or one choice is going to be mutter. If it's a reservoir, and it's just ready to come out, So then that's the tzad, that's the side of the dichotomy which is more likely to be mutter. However, if it's chibur nachbar, if it's a wound, then it's aser, because one is not allowed to create a wound on Shabbos. Now the Gemara clarifies. And if you would say that we view it as a reservoir, now we have a new question. Is the reason that the person is doing it, how do we understand his intention? Of course we could ask him, but that's again not how we understand Halacha Shabbos. Halacha Shabbos is not a subjective thing that we can ask each person their intention. In a particular case, we have a way of understanding what a person's intention is. There are cases where it is subjective, but in this instance, especially when we know what the person's goal is, his goal is to be together with his wife, how do we sort of interpret that intent? Is his goal to have the blood, and then in which case, vishari, it is mutter, or perhaps he's trying to create an opening, right, which is certainly, one could understand why it is he wants to create an opening, in which case, we would say it falls under the malach of binyan, of building. He's building a doorway. Right? I saw recently in a halacha sefer that ostensibly opening and closing a door on Shabbos could potentially be iser of binyan, because the fact that every time you close the door you're building a wall, and every time you open the door you're sort of accomplishing the building of a door. However, because of the fact that it's designed to be opened and closed, that in itself, that action, opening and closing it, is not really any kind of a building in either direction. And the same thing is true with a window. Although every time you close a window, you're building a wall. We don't view that as building a wall. The wall is always built. And within the wall, there's an aperture which is allowed to be opened and closed. Hence the window. But in this instance, of course, that's not what's happening. It's a one-time deal. You're opening, creating an opening in the woman. Is that opening, do we view that as building on Shabbos? In which case it would be aser. V'imtim salomar l'dam hutzarech, and if you'll say that it is for the blood that is necessary, u'pezach memela kasi, and the door comes sort of automatically, so then halacha kirev shimon d'amar davar shem iskavin mutter, or halacha kirev yuda d'amar davar shem iskavin aser. Do we paskin like the Tanner of Shimon, who holds that a davar shem iskavin, which we'll explain in a moment, is mutter, or like Rabbi Yehuda that says that it's aser? So, in order to understand this Gemara, we kind of have to take a little bit of a crash course in some basic Halacha Shabbos concepts. One concept is the idea that there's an idea of davar she'ein miskaven. If a person does something on Shabbos not intending to accomplish a malacha, then there's a machlokas, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, whether or not that thing is allowed to be done or not. As an example, if a person drags a bench, this is the classic example that the Gemara gives. If a person drags a bench on Shabbos, and he's doing this outside, and the legs of the bench that he's dragging are dragging along in the dirt, and let's say for a second it was a relatively heavy bench, and the dirt was somewhat soft, that dragging could pull up dirt and could create a furrow, could create a ditch. And the creation of that ditch is something which is not allowed to be done on Shabbos, it's digging. And digging is not allowed on Shabbos, it was something that was done in the Mishkan, which is again the source for what exactly is Asar on Shabbos. However, your goal in doing that action was not to create a ditch. Your goal in the action was to move the bench from point A to point B. You wanted to bring it over somewhere else to sit down. That is a davar she'ein miskaven, literally something which is not intended. Your intention was not to create a furrow. Your intention was not to dig. Your intention was to move the bench. However, in doing the bench, a side result of your action is to create a ditch. So is one allowed to move the bench on Shabbos if he's going to create a ditch? Now, the presumed case all the time when we're discussing davar she'ein miskaven is that it's not what's called a psik resha, which literally means cutting off of the head. This is a reference to a case in Hilcha Shabbos, which the Gemara discusses. Apparently there was a very strange custom in the time of the Gemara that when a chicken was shechted and the head was cut off, the head was given as a toy to the children to play with. I personally would not give my child a head of a chicken to play with. However, that was something that they did in the time of the Gemara. So the question is asked, can a person cut off the head of a chicken on Shabbos in order to give the child a toy to play with? Obviously, though, when you cut off the head of the chicken is going to die. That is an inevitable result. Thus, we say that in a case like that, although it's a Darshein Meskavin, really my goal is to get the child a toy, not to kill the chicken. However, because of the fact that it's inevitable that you're going to kill the chicken, and killing the chicken is a malacha on Shabbos, we don't view that as a Darshein Meskavin, which is mutter, like Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon himself would agree, although he ordinarily says Darshein Meskavin is mutter, in that instance, an instance of sick resha, where it's, the malacha is certainly going to occur, it's usher, and one is not allowed to do it. However, Rabbi Yehuda holds it's always usher. If we have a chance, we'll see in Tosus some other concepts which kind of muddy up the idea of Davashim Miskavin a little bit, and we'll see if we can get to a greater understanding of this Gemara through that. But one thing that we definitely have to understand is, if our Gemara is using Rav Shimon to give us a potential heter for the Chazan and Kala being together for the first time on Shabbos because it is a Davar She'en Miskavin, that means that we're not discussing a case of a Psik Resha, a case where the Melacha is absolutely going to happen. Because otherwise Rav Shimon would agree that it was Usur. And we're going to see that both Rashi and Tosus are going to grapple with that issue. We'll see those Rashi and Tosus shortly. So just back to our Gemara, just understanding the Pashat, the basic back and forth of exactly what our Gemara is doing. So even if what's happening is that you're trying to get the blood, however, as a result of getting the blood, the doorway is automatically being created as sort of a side result, that's a Davar She'en Miskavin, and therefore one is allowed to do it according to Rav Shimon. If you're in Rabbi Yehuda, though, it would be Azar. And that's another question that we have. And then the Gemara says, V'im tim salomar halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, and if one would say that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, that we paskin that the halacha is Azar, perhaps still there's a way to matter. Mekalkul, how is that? V'im tim salomar halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, excuse me. Mekalkel hu etzal ha-pasach. Is it a destruction regarding the doorway? O mesaken hu etzal ha-pasach. In other words, if one took a sledgehammer and knocked a hole through an existing wall, so of course, technically, if the hole is big enough and in the right shape, he may have created a doorway. But that's not building. That's destroying. He's very much taking a destructive force against that wall. And we can assume the wall does not appreciate it. Therefore, how do we view that action on Shabbos? Because, another rule of Shabbos, which we're going to have to keep in mind, something that's done in a destructive fashion is not usher on Shabbos, in fact, it's mutter. Especially according to Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rav Shimon, again, this is another machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Shimon, which is sort of not relevant to the original machlokas about Davar She'en Miskavin. But there's a second machlokas about whether or not one is allowed to do a destructive act on Shabbos or not. According to Rav Shimon, Mekalkel is Aser, but according to Rav Yehuda, according to Rav Shimon, Mekalkel is Aser in certain instances, but according to everybody, Mekalkel most of the time is Mutter, Rav Yehuda as well. So even if we would say that it's a case of Davar She'en Miskavin, and we're in the world of Rav Yehuda who holds Davar She'en Miskavin is a problem and it's Aser, nevertheless, it might be a destructive act. And a destructive act, even if you intended to do it, would be mutter. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda, let's say for a second, although it may not be true, but to some extent, he equates Davar She'en Miskavin, something which you did unintentionally, and an intentional act. In the same way that you're not allowed to do an intentional act on Shabbos, one is not allowed to do an unintentional act. And dragging the bench, despite the fact that you don't want to create that furrow, if you're going to create that furrow, if you end up creating that furrow, it is usur and Rabbi Yehuda holds you're not allowed to do that. But certainly it's no worse than an intentional act. And we know that an intentional act, which you do in a destructive fashion, is not going to be, certainly not chayev, and may in fact be mutter, which is just another complication of our sugya, which is what makes the sugya so intriguing and so complex and gives it so many layers. On Shabbos, we discuss two different types of right and wrong. There's chayiv and pater, which is whether or not if one did it on Shabbos, he would get the death penalty for doing it or not. And then there's a second, or is it an action which is not chayiv misa, which he doesn't get the death penalty for. And then there's a second level, which is even if one is sort of exempt from that punishment, but do we allow a person to do that in the first place if he would ask us? Or do we say, no, you're not allowed to do that, and we say, pater aval aser. It's pater when it's exempt from punishment, however, one is not allowed to do it in the first place if he would ask us a shiloh. So again, that's part of what makes this whole thing so tricky, is that mekalkel is really, presumably, only pater. Really only exempts one from punishment, but does not actually allow one to do it in the first place. But we're trying to understand whether or not a person is in fact allowed to do this way for the first time on Shabbos. We're wanting to know if he would come to us and ask us, if he would come to us, the rabbis, and ask us what the halacha is, what would we tell him? So it's unclear how exactly Mekalkel is going to help us. Let's take a look at Rashi, who is hopefully both going to clarify things and probably also going to muddy things up a bit. Rashi says, Mahu livol b'tchila. Rashi first explains to us what's happening in terms of this question. Lo shmiya lehu hachmas nisa de la'al. This Gemara did not know of the Mishnah earlier, which says that one is not allowed to be together with his wife for the first time on Friday night. We had a pretty explicit statement of a Mishnah saying, we separate the chasen and kala Friday nights. Inami. Or another answer, Rashi's grappling with the implied question that, if we already said it, why is it that we don't allow, why is it that we have a question? We should know what the halacha is. So, inami shmieluhu umibailu halacha in halacha. They heard that Mishnah, but they wanted to know, is in fact that halacha correct or not? So now Rashi says as follows, mifkid pocket. Is, we wanted to know, is the blood viewed as like a reservoir? Kimo pikadon, similar to the term pikadon, which is like a watched collateral. If a person gives an object to somebody else to watch for him, that object is referred to as a pikadon. Kanos v'omid is gathered together and standing, ve'eno nivla b'tafani harechem, and is not absorbed in the walls of the womb. Lihiyos yitzios ayide chabur, that its exit should be based on a chabura. So Rashi actually seems to view the two disparate ideas of Mifkid Pakim and Chaburi Mechbar as being a difference between some kind of physiological understanding of what exactly is happening inside the woman. Is the blood in fact absorbed in the walls of the womb or not? And Rashi, just to finish off the Rashi, Elisha Pesach no b'fanav, the door is closed in front of that blood. When the man enters and opens up that door, v'yotze, the blood comes out. O chabur nachbar. Or is it a wound? Dam besulim hayotze ayde chabura. The dam besulim which come, are they? Is it coming through a wound? Huba shadovin esparik nechabera, that the wall has separated from its friend, and that wound allows the blood to flow. It's unclear whether Rashi's understanding our Gemara as being a physiological difference in the two tzadim. It would certainly be easier to understand if he's understanding both sides of the debate as having the same understanding of what is happening inside the womb and inside the woman. So we can take that tack for now, since the language of Rashi is not so clearly indicative in either direction. So says Rashi as follows. Intim salomar mifkid pocket. Okay. If we would say that it's considered like a reservoir, v'im bo mishim chabur, and it's not going to be any kind of wound, kavanas hamotzil l'mai. The intent of the one who's bringing out that blood is for what? L'dam hu tzarech. Is it for the sake of bringing out the blood, umiskavin lotzio, and he has in mind to remove it. Vishari, and then it would be mutter. Tahamifkid pocket, because it's like a reservoir, and if it's a reservoir and he's doing it for the sort of the right intent, right, the intention in fact makes for a difference. Because if a person is intending to do a malacha, then it would perhaps be asr. And if he's trying to do something for a purpose which is not a malacha oriented purpose, it would be mutter. One thing that's not so clear is why exactly a person would need the blood. Like, what exactly is the Gemara mean, a person needs the blood? The other side would seem to be the more obvious side. Like Rashi says, Odoma lepasach miskaven, perhaps he needs to create a door of Arayu kabinyan, and it's like a building of Asr. When a man and woman are together, clearly a person wants to create that opening. Having the blood come out is, you know, just sort of something that happens, but of course the goal is to create that opening, and thereby to be able to have kids. But how is it that one could say, oh, I want the blood to come out? So Tosfos actually gives two answers, which I think is worthwhile to look at right now really quickly. If you look at Tosfos, Dibur Hamaskol Adam Hutzarach Vishari, if you look at the second line of Tosfos, it says, Perish Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam explains, Tzarach Lahotzi Adam Shelo Yislachek Pa'am Acheres. You need to remove the blood in order not to get dirty another time. Kishiyivo, when he is together with his wife. In other words, there are a person when he's together with his wife doesn't want to have to worry about blood coming out every time, and therefore he wants to get rid of it all the first time, or as much of it as he can the first time, in order to not sort of get dirty. It is kind of gross. And if you look at the last line of this Tosfos, the Ri gives a different explanation, Verima Farish. The Ri explains the Dam Hutzarach, he needs the blood wise. Hutzarach Liros Imhi Basula. He needs to see if she's a besula, because if there's no blood, that raises the question, as we've discussed, is she a besula or not? However, if there's blood, he knows she's a besula. He doesn't have to go to Besdin to create some kind of a claim. He knows that he intended to marry besula, and he did marry besula, so sort of he's safe. These are the two explanations that Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri give. We may take another peek at that Tosfos a little bit later. But for now, let's hold off on it. Let's take a look back at Rashi. We were up to Rashi, v'imtim salom ha'ladam hu miskaven. If his goal is to remove the blood, v'lo l'pesach, and not to create a doorway, u'miyu al karach pischo me'melahave. However, nevertheless, a door is definitely going to come. So halacha k'Rab Yehuda, is the halacha like Rab Yehuda, b'davar she'im miskaven v'asr, by a case of a davar she'im miskaven where an unintended result happens as a result of your original action, o k'Rav Shimon, or is it like Rav Shimon u'mutter, and it's mutter? Now, one thing that's unclear is that Rashi uses the wording umihu al karchach pischa me'melahave. It sounds like it's what we call a psik resha. So Rashi addresses that here. After that, Rashi o k'Rav Shimon u'mutter. Rashi says, "V'im tomar psik resha v'lo yamasu." Isn't it a case of psik resha? The malacha is definitely going to happen. There's different understandings of exactly how we understand it. One, perhaps obvious one, is the fact that as much as it's a davar she'eino miskaven and it's an unintended result of your action, if you know 1,000% that this is going to happen as a result of your action, it's a little bit hard to claim at that point, I didn't mean for that to happen. One very good example of that, the chicken is one, but let's think about our fridge. If you open the fridge, the light is going to go on. But I don't want the light to go on. I just want to open the fridge to take out something. And let's assume that you don't even need the light to see whatever it is you're taking out. My only intention is to open the fridge. I don't want the light to go on. The light's going to go on its own accord, but I don't really care. That's not my goal. Call a spade, buddy. You know that when you open the fridge, that light's going to go on. And by you opening the fridge, you're doing that. It's sort of like saying, I'm flicking the light switch, but I don't want the light to go on. You want the light to go on. That's why you're flicking the switch. If you want to continually flick the switch, and you're hoping that one time the light's going to not go on, that is, at the same time, not what your action is. And we view your action based on the result that it's definitely going to have. That's the action that you're taking. It's not purely based on your intention. So therefore, we want to understand, isn't it a psik reisha here? Isn't it going to absolutely happen that you're going to create a Pesach, you're going to create a doorway, and although your goal is to take the blood out, you're also going to create a doorway, and therefore it's a problem. So Rashi says, Halparchinam alakaman. We ask that question later on Vavam Abayz, which we will, Be'ezus Hashem, see in a few weeks. U'mishaninan, and we answer over there, Yesh Shebekiyin Bahataya. There are those that are experts in literally leaning. But what it means is sort of causing the Aver to go in a direction which isn't going to break the hymen, but still is going to enter the woman. Ve'ein dam yotze, and blood will not come out, the af ein pesach neftach, and the door will not open, hilkach lav psik reisha v'lo yamasu. Therefore, it's not considered a psik reisha. Now, on the surface of it, this Rashi is completely and totally baffling. Because, how is it possible to say that it's not a psik reisha? The whole idea of something not being a psik reisha is, for example, I'm going to drag this bench, and I can't tell if this bench is heavy enough to create a furrow in the dirt. I don't know. And to be honest, I don't want to create a furrow. I just want to bring this bench over here, but it's too heavy for me to actually lift it up in the air. So I'm going to drag it. So it's a davar shein miskaven. It's not a psik reisha because it's not guaranteed dirt is going to, a furrow is going to get created. Therefore, you're, according to Rav Shimon, you're allowed to take that action, you're allowed to move that bench. However, let us say that you're not sure you're going to be able to move the bench at all. It's a really heavy bench. If you move the bench, yes, if I move the bench, a furrow will be created. However, I don't even know if my standing there and exerting all my strength and pulling the bench in a particular direction is even going to move the bench at all. So would we tell you that that's not considered a psik reisha? It's certainly hard to understand that we wouldn't consider it a psik reisha, because it's definitely going to be as a result of your action, if your action is in fact taken, that a furrow will be created. Or in this instance, if you're successful in bringing the dam out, which according to what we're saying now is in fact your intent, if you're successful in drawing the blood out, you will absolutely create a doorway. So yes, I'd like to not create a doorway and still get the blood out. And it's not guaranteed I'm going to get the blood out, because this is the idea of Hataya. So it's unclear. It seems like Rashi is considering that a non-psik reisha. Certainly, if that is in fact what Rashi is saying, it would be a tremendous, tremendous chiddush, a very new idea. Certainly not the simple explanation of what is meant by psik reisha. And we will see in Tosfos, if not, I don't know if we'll have time to get to it today, but we will certainly see to it next week, that that's not how Tosfos understands this question. In fact, we can look at it right now real quick. Tosus says the dam l'tzarach b'shari. We're going to kind of be seeing this Tosus in pieces, I guess. But it's worthwhile to look at Tosus' initial line right now. Vim tomar, Tosus asks, v'ha psik reisha hu le'inyan ha-pesach? Isn't it a psik reisha regarding the door? Right? The same question that Rashi asked. If you're going to draw the blood out, you're definitely going to create a door, and we know the Rav Shimon, you're definitely going to create an opening, and Rav Shimon would say that the psik reisha is in fact asur, and one cannot then be together with his wife for the first time Friday night. And Tosfos says, without referencing the Gemara on Vav and Beis that Rashi did, the Tzarach Lomar, you have to say, Shiyachol lehotzi adam b'lo asiyas ha-pesach. Different than the case that Rashi was referencing, that there's this idea of hataya, of sort of like leaning to one side, but rather, it's possible to be motzi the dam, it's possible to remove the dam without creating an actual opening. How exactly that's possible, Tosfos doesn't really explain. Now just one thing that's worth calling to our attention, now that we did that piece of Tosfos and the line that immediately follows it, it doesn't seem to be any connection between those two pieces. Generally, when we learn a Tosfos, we'd like to see some kind of a hemshach. You know, traditionally, some kind of a hemshach would be that now that I answered this question, I now have a new question, because based on my current understanding, I have a question that I didn't have before this understanding, or something of that sort. But, you know, sort of a chain that A leads to B and B leads to C. But here, there doesn't seem to be any connection at all. And as a Rebbe of mine once said, Rabbi Zakkai, and it's brought down in other Acharonim as well, that when you see a Tosfos with two unconnected points, There's no reason Tosis wouldn't make it into a new Dibur HaMaskel. You see often the Tosis will create two Tosis with the same heading because he's discussing two different topics on that particular line. Here also there's two questions. Isn't there one question of Psikresha, and isn't there another question of what exactly is the requirement of Dam, which is the discussion that Rabbeinu Tam is about to have in the next line. It's a little hard to understand what exactly the connection is between these two lines. I myself have done some research and thought about it at great length and have not come up with anything too meaningful to answer that question. One thing that's interesting to note, which doesn't seem to be too significant at first glance, and maybe it's not, but it's worth pointing out in any event, is that according to Tosfos asks this question on a different step than Rashi asks it. Tosfos asks it as soon as the Gemara says L'dam Hutzarach V'Shari. He said if you need the blood, it would be mutter. And Tosfos wants to know, needing the blood doesn't make it mutter. If you're absolutely going to create a Pesach, it's still Psik Reisha and Aser. However, Rashi only mentions it once we bring in Reb Shimon, who is the proponent of the opinion that Davar Shemesh Gavin is mutter, unless it's a Psik Reisha. According to Reb Yehuda, it doesn't matter if it's a Psik Reisha, it's always Aser. So it's unclear why Rashi and Tosfos bring it on different lines. It may be for no real reason. Maybe the Rashi happened to mention it later and Tosfos happens to mention it earlier. But it bears mention. Okay, let us take a look at the last two Rashis on this particular Imdim Zalomar set, on this Lashon of the Gemara. V'imdim Zalomar Halachik Rabbi Yehuda, this is the second wide line of Rashi. Rashi says, Akati Ikalim Mibai, there's still a question to be asked. The Kaimalon that we established, Ki Am Rabbi Yehuda, the Misakin. When did Rabbi Yehuda say his halacha, the Davar Shem Miskavin is Asr? That's when you're doing something in a constructive fashion, as the way it was done in the Mishkan. Avol b'mekalkal, when you're doing it destructively, ain't a malacha, it's not considered a malacha, and you're going to be pater. V'yesh l'shlal pesachzeh, and there is to wonder about the pesach that's being created in this case, im tikun hu etzla, if it is some kind of a betterment by her, o kukul hu etzla. Why would it be some kind of a destruction, right? Typically, if one creates a door, assuming when you create a real door, not just taking a sledgehammer to a wall, but create an actual door, that's an improvement. So in this instance, it might be sort of viewed as a ruinous action. Shehabesula chashuva min habula, that there's a greater chashivas, a greater, I don't know if importance is the right word, but some kind of a greater, I guess importance is the best word we can use, of a virgin more than a woman who is not a virgin. And therefore, they're turning her from a besula into a bu'ula is some kind of a destructive action on some level. It's creating like a lower level of, I don't know exactly how to express it, importance. Again, chashivas somehow. I don't know, importance is probably not the best translation in this context. Let's take a look at the next Rashi. Vim Zim Zalomar Makakalu, Lo Bar Sinan. Rashi tells us that there was no extra line after that of what would be if it was in fact Makakal. Vim Makakal, Dibra Kol Mutter. Because if it was Makakal, according to everybody, it would be Mutter. In other words, every time that we viewed these Imtim Zalomars and gave a dichotomy of questions, we always gave two sides, and then picked the side which would be Aser, and saw if we could still find some kind of a Mutter side, even within the Aser side. However, here, once we're picking the Kalkel, there is no Iser. Everybody is going to hold its Mutter. Because Rashi tells us, She'en l'chav mekalkel chayev, you don't have a case of destructive action ever being chayev, el chovel maver, unless a person is creating a wound, which again we classified this in, according to this lesson, as not being a wound. Umaver, one who lets a fire, alibid Reb Shimon, and that's the one according to Reb Shimon. Vachalav chovel, and here it's not a wound. Because we were working in the idea that we're viewing it as the dam is sort of in a reservoir and stored. So again, just to summarize, we created this idea that what's the halacha of whether one is allowed to be together with his wife for the first time on Shabbos. We said, well, is it a reservoir or is it a wound? And even if it's a reservoir, right, we asked, well, what's your intention? Is your intention to draw out the blood? Is your intention to create a door? Creating a door would be usher, but if it's just a reservoir and you're doing it for the blood, then it's mutter. And then we said, well, but it's really a Devar Shem Miskaven. It depends how we pass him by Devar Shem Miskaven, like Rav Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. And then we said that even if we pass him like Rabbi Yehuda, but Devar Shem Miskaven, nevertheless, we still view that as Mekalkel, and then perhaps, even though Devar Shem Miskaven is Aser, since it's a destructive action, it might be Mutter. And therefore, there are all sorts of reasons to potentially be Matir, husband and wife meeting together for the first time on Shabbos. And we will continue with the Aser side of things. Bezus Hashem next week. Have a good week, everyone.